ACC Sports Roundtable, episode 135, week one in the SEC, recorded Thursday, September 4th, 2014. Tonight, the roundtable tests out going remote as the host Shane Bailey does the podcast from the road. He is joined by Britton Burton to look at week one of the SEC. They both have to take their lumps with Texas A&M's performance against South Carolina. They also talk about other disappointments like Bo Wallace's first half performance, Vanderbilt's whole game, and Arkansas's second half. They also look at the performance Georgia has against Clemson, LSU hosting Wisconsin, and Alabama, West Virginia. All this and more on tonight's SEC SRT. Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable, episode 100-something, 30-something. We're 135. It's week one in the books from the SEC, so we're going to talk a little football this week. It's our regular type of podcast where we're going to take a look at what happened, how much crow we apparently need to eat. And what surprised us, which definitely is why we're eating crow. So we'll talk about that. But this is SEC Sports Roundtable. It is a weekly podcast that looks at the SEC. We do football, basketball, baseball. We do it from somewhat of a fan's perspective. So we all have allegiances, and that's going to skew our opinions a little bit. But we try to talk as intelligently as possible here. So we do try to be realistically in our understanding that sometimes our teams are not good, and that sometimes we do have a little false sense of belief in how good our teams will be. But you have to have that if you're a fan. So that's the approach we take this. And you can find this podcast about anywhere that a podcast can be found. We're on Stitcher. We're on iTunes. Anywhere you can get an RSS feed, you can find SEC SRT. Look up those six letters, and you should be able to search it and find us. And we do a video version of this. That's how we record these. We're trying it a little different tonight, so hopefully the audio is going to work for us. But I've been called out of town, and we definitely wanted to make sure we get our weekly week one podcast going. So we're trying this from a hotel room in Memphis, Tennessee tonight as home base. So we've put together a skeleton of the podcasting equipment, and we're going to hope it works and makes it through this podcast. But joining me tonight is Britton Burton. Welcome along, Britton.
Hey, Shane. No offense, but I'm actually kind of glad that it's been so long since I've seen you compared to the last 3-4 weeks.
Yeah, no kidding. For those that have been listening, we've been on a marathon run catching up with all the podcasts, looking over all the teams. We encourage you, if you haven't got a hold of those yet, go back and listen, see what you think about what we thought about your teams. We were right on a couple. We were wrong on one or two as well. So, but that's what the good news is. So is a lot of people.
Yeah, you make enough predictions, you're going to be wrong eventually, right?
That's right. And I went back to be honest, I went back and listened to that podcast to see where we failed. And I wish I had my notes, because I actually was taking notes as I listened to it. You go, yep. I'll say Blair, the best one Blair had was, if you're waiting for, or this might have been you, if you're waiting for the next Johnny Manziel to walk through the door, you're going to be waiting a while. That was a great quote that it's like things we wish we didn't say on this podcast.
Yeah, it's too bad we record this stuff, huh?
Yeah, no kidding. But we did get some stuff right. We talked about how the strength of that program was going to be the offensive line. And they really bought so much time. If you haven't figured it out yet, we were not right on A&M. But that offensive line gave Kenny Hill so much time. You really, really saw that. The other thing we were right with, or at least I was, you all weren't buying into it, but I said the defense was going to be improved. And they were. They still let South Carolina put up 28, but South Carolina is, you know, was supposed to be fighting for the East. So I don't know what team showed up for South Carolina. I don't think it was the team we were expecting. I don't think it's the team we'll end up seeing at the end of the year. But with all that aside, Texas A&M came in prepared and beat them.
Yeah, I think, I mean, when you talk about surprises for week one, just that entire game has to be number one on your list. One, I think we're not the only ones who thought Texas A&M was going to take a step back this year and were worried about the quarterback position there and the defense. And we're also not the only ones who thought South Carolina was going to be an elite team in the East. And watching that unfold, I felt like A&M is obviously much better than we gave them credit for. A lot of that has to do with the fact that Kevin Sumlin is the quarterback whisperer, apparently, and it doesn't seem to matter who's taking snaps. I mean, it's unbelievable the production he gets out of that position. But there were also – the South Carolina defense looked just utterly lost at times. I don't want to take anything away from Texas A&M because when you throw for 511 yards – you're obviously doing something right, but it was shocking how open some of these receivers were on, you know, 8 to 10 yard routes that aren't like deep routes where you're beating people deep and getting 5 yards open. You're not supposed to be open by 5 yards on a slant route. There was just a lot of confusion. There was absolutely no pass rush, which, you know, at this early point in the season, you don't know is that because South Carolina doesn't have a pass rush or because the A&M line, which we thought was going to be very good, is as good or better than we thought. So there's a lot that you still kind of don't know because it's week one. But just going off of one game, it looks like Tech – and games, if they play like that against some other good offenses from the SEC.
No, you're right. I'm totally amazed at how South Carolina played. If you look at the way they came on the field, they looked flat. But Texas A&M came ready to play. You're right about what Sumlin can do with quarterbacks. And we had a lot of banter and chatter back and forth on YouTube about the Texas A&M program, and you know, I think his name was Tracy. You know, that he told me that there's a lot of things that Sumlin's hiding, and you're going to see a much more cohesive team when you see him on the field this year, and you saw some of that start to take shape. So I don't know what's going to come down the road. We were right in one prediction, though. I said that come next week, Texas A&M was not going to be in the top 20 any longer. That's true. You know, now they're in the top 10.
Yeah, and I'm sure that's exactly what you meant when
that's
you said
exactly
that.
Exactly what I meant. I might have followed it up with something else that I didn't mean at the time. but you look at, and, you know, we can't sit here and say that what's going to happen from today forward, Texas A&M's going to run the gauntlet. I can't sit there and say that. Did they surprise me? Were they much more improved? Were they a much better team than we were expecting to see? Yes. But with all that being said, from week to week in the SEC, you really don't know what you have on the field until week three or week four in most situations, because you can hide a lot of problems that sooner or later get exposed. And from an analyst standpoint, I'm not an analyst, but I didn't see a lot of flaws, but there's got to be some sort of chink in that armor. It's just a matter of who sees it and how can they exploit it.
Yeah, and I mean, they looked elite offensively. Those receivers are real, even though a lot of them are young and kind of unproven. Offense is real, but the defense still left you with some questions. They were vastly improved against the run, and that to me is very, very important. They still gave up a lot of deep balls where they got, you know, a receiver got behind the secondary, but to me that seems more correctable than what their problems were last year, which was just simple hand the ball off and run it up the middle and pound them because they just weren't big enough to stop you. And that didn't seem to be the case as much. Now, we also, you know, Mike Davis was didn't really play, and the, South Carolina is somewhat unique for an elite SEC program in that they don't really have a second and third back who is sort of at that elite level like you saw with Georgia and Alabama and LSU over the weekend. So I don't know how much that played into it. We thought that the South Carolina O-line was supposed to be good, and they didn't really do a whole lot. Now, how much of that was the fact that it seemed like they were down by 14 as soon as the gun went off, and it was at least a 14-point lead almost the entire way, and so they were throwing the ball, and I don't know. It was just a weird game. I also wonder how much the sort of indecisiveness from South Carolina on, are we a 3-4 or are we a 4-2-5 or are we a – what are we defensively? And we talked a little bit about that in their preview. Is that going to be a dangerous thing? It was just a weird game, and I don't really know. A&M is definitely better than I thought they were going to be. There's no doubt about that. I think they're going to be a legitimate contender, but you're right. The schedule is so tough. Just in the West, it's going to be brutal. You know, I'm not ready to crown them the champion or anything because they had one great showing, but Sumlin definitely proved that just with that one game. I mean, he'd already proved it wasn't just that one game, but that one game really did a lot to say Sumlin is a great coach and he belongs in this league with some of the other great coaches.
Well, and we've knocked on him. I know Blair's really knocked on him, Sumlin, about, you know, he's only been at Houston for 3 years and then he left. He was only here for 3 years. He was playing with other people's players. He's really starting to play with his players now. And we thought from the recruiting numbers, they were good recruits, but you're really seeing talent there as well. Another point you brought up was, you know, looking at Spurrier at halftime, you don't see him feeling like he's been beat on the football field very often.
And yeah.
And he was brutally honest about it. He's like, we're getting our butts kicked. We're getting outplayed here. And as good a coach as he is, I don't think he was prepared for what Sumlin and A&M was bringing at him and the South Carolina program from an offensive scheme or a defensive scheme.
Yeah, I agree. It's rare to see a Hall of Fame coach be totally outcoached, outmanned, out everything, and that was the case. I mean, South Carolina really had no answer for anything, and if not for a couple of, I don't know if fortunate is the right word, but some deep balls that they connected on that are not exactly high percentage plays. I mean, this is like a 52-10 game, you know, instead of 52-28. I mean, it never really felt close, and it could have been way worse than it even was.
Well, let's talk about the other game that happened that Thursday night. And it was also another surprise. And it wasn't an SEC-SEC matchup, but, you know, Vanderbilt hyped everything up. They got to have the spotlight having another Thursday night kickoff game. And you know, we all on that podcast said that Vanderbilt was going to struggle, but we're going to give them a win against Temple. Well, not only did they lose against Temple, they lost bad. And they looked bad. I mean, as bad as South Carolina looked, at least they could score points and contain every once in a while. I never saw anything that I was impressed with out of Vanderbilt. I mean, Mason goes with, you know, he says he's got one quarterback, and he's going to let him prove himself, and then it's not even halftime, and he's pulling him, and he plays all three quarterbacks. It's I don't know what they have there, and we talked about their defense switching up. Could they be prepared? And Temple did everything they wanted to against that defense.
Yeah, this was absolutely the worst-case scenario start to the season for Vanderbilt. You know, we've talked at length about how fickle their fan base is, and rightly so. I mean, when you've lost consistently for 70 years, I don't know how many diehard, passionate fans you can be expected to have. But, you know, we talked about if they have a weird start, you know, a Vanderbiltish start where they lose a couple of games they shouldn't, or they just don't look very good, that we could be 2-3 games into the season, and all the momentum that was built up by that James Franklin period will just be completely erased. It'll almost be like Franklin never happened because fans will just be off the ship. And man, I tell you, losing to Temple like that, the thing that was so frustrating is just watching it even to an untrained, you know, I'm not a football coach, but I could tell that Vanderbilt had superior athletes in almost every position, every level of the defense, of the offense, and so forth. And they just couldn't do anything. And that's kind of the Vanderbilt that we've come to expect before the James Franklin era. And man, if that's what it's going to be, even if it's just for a few games this season, as Mason kind of gets his footing and that program gets his footing with all the change, you know, like I said, it's going to be like Franklin never happened, and all that momentum is just going to be out the window.
Well, you look at Vanderbilt's schedule, it doesn't get easier. They have UMass in 2 weeks, but they've got Ole Miss this week.
Well, is UMass even considered easy, though? After, I mean, Temple was considered easy, so.
I don't know. I mean, I'm still going to give them the win, but you look at that schedule, they get Ole Miss this week, and we'll talk about Ole Miss in a minute. Then they get UMass, a game they should win. Then they have South Carolina, who, as bad as they played against A&M, still would have put up 37 on Vanderbilt. Then Kentucky, we'll talk about my Cats. They've got a legitimate shot to beat them the way they play compared to Vanderbilt. Then Georgia. Yep. I mean, it's not looking good for the first half of this season for Vanderbilt right now, unless you see something completely different start to happen on that field next week, or this week upcoming with Ole Miss.
Yeah, it could get nasty in a hurry. And, you know, before the season, we thought they're going to struggle to make a bowl, but they'll beat the teams like Temple. You know, maybe they're fighting for that sixth win in the last game or two of the season. Now it's hard to even see that. And even with that scenario that we thought was going to be the case, we thought, okay, are Vanderbilt fans going to be on board? Are they still going to support this program? You know, losing to a Temple, if they have I think they're going to get killed by Ole Miss. If they have a close game or lose to UMass, they're going to get run by teams like Georgia and South Carolina. It could get really ugly in a hurry.
Well, I think we all said they could go bowling this year, but it was going to require to beat all 4 year non-conference, because they set up easy non-conference games, Vanderbilt did. So you had to win those four games. And then you had to win a Kentucky, a Tennessee, or a Missouri, and win two of those three. I don't know where that's going to happen, because Old Dominion is their other one, and then Charleston Southern. So there were four winnable games at the beginning of the season, and then they had to win two more from the bottom half of the East, Kentucky, maybe Florida. Who knows what we have with them, Missouri or Tennessee. And it's not there anymore. There's not three wins in the East for Vanderbilt this year.
No, absolutely not.
Well, let's talk about their opponent this week. And as we do this, this will be our preview for next week as well, because if you look at the slate of games, there's not a lot to be excited about as far as matchups in week two. This is the only SEC-SEC matchup. And it is Ole Miss and Vanderbilt. But you look at their opponent. We talked about it on the preview. This is going to be basically a home game for Ole Miss at Vanderbilt, because they're going to LP Field. And by all indications, there's a ton of Ole Miss tickets that were sold. Nashville has a huge Ole Miss popular fan base. It's not going to be a convenient place to play from a fan perspective. And then you look at what Ole Miss did. Bo Wallace finally got his act together in the second half. And you said that just a few minutes ago that Ole Miss is going to run all over them. I don't know if that's true. If Bo Wallace has that type of game again, and Vanderbilt can actually do something with it, because every time Ole Miss did that, Boise did the same thing and gave it right back to them.
Yeah, that's true.
So if you look at it, and all of a sudden they make those same silly mistakes and throw for four interceptions again, and we talked about Bo Wallace. What did we really have with him? You know, if you get a program that can do something with those interceptions, that's a whole different ballgame when you come to think about it. So as much as Vanderbilt was down and the way they got beat by Temple – if Bo Wallace has the first half he had against Boise State, Vanderbilt could come back and win that game just because of being in the right place at the right time, because I think they could do something more with it than just give it right back like Boise State did.
Was that Bo Wallace performance not just the quintessential Bo Wallace that we've talked about what seems like the last 2 years? You know, he is capable of amazing things and having some unbelievable plays and leading the team to victory and to new heights, but then he's also just capable of it's got to be some of the most frustrating moments to be an Ole Miss fan, because you just never know what you're going to get, good Bo, bad Bo. And man, he was bad Bo in the first half, and then he was good Bo in the second half. And I agree with your premise that if he plays like that, you know, can Vanderbilt take advantage? But I also just see what Vanderbilt put out there last week and the jump in athleticism that they're going to be facing when they play Ole Miss, even if Bo, you know, craps the bed like he kind of did in that first half. I just, unless there is vast improvement from Vanderbilt, even with some kind of terrible performance like that by Ole Miss, I just don't see how they can do anything against a vastly superior athletic squad to the Temple team that just beat them.
I'm giving Vanderbilt the loss, don't get me wrong. But there is that opportunity, and that's that right there is the very reason why we had trouble giving Ole Miss 9 or 10 wins. And being able to compete in the West is because you don't know what Bo Wallace you're going to have. And if he does that kind of performance against the middle to upper roads, if he does that against Mississippi State or A&M or Auburn or even Arkansas, forget it. They'll take advantage of it because Arkansas looked much better.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. As we look to this game, there's no reason why Ole Miss is going to lose it, except that's the only reason, except Bo Wallace.
Yeah, it's so funny how he can be the reason you win a game and he can be the reason you lose a game more than many other players in the country right now. It's amazing how what the ebbs and flows are. That's going to be a fun team to watch just because of that dynamic,
but
the rest,
man,
of the year.
You've got to give it to his resiliency. I mean, I'm sitting here bashing the guy, but I mean, he basically forgot all the mistakes he made and went back out and was a gunslinger again and put up 28 points in the fourth quarter.
Yep.
So, you know, you got to have a good short-term memory, one that's non-existent. And he has that. That's a great thing to have, because he's got the talent. I mean, you saw that. It's just you want to see more consistency there. Then I'm looking at South Dakota State, who they played. You know, South Dakota State up into the fourth quarter, or late into the third, was holding with them pretty well. I mean, Missouri hopped out and had a pretty good lead in the first period, but, you know, they clawed their way back a little bit. I still don't have a gauge on where Missouri is. But, you know, when you look at the score and the preview, it looks like they ended up doing what they needed to do, but I think that got a little closer than most people were wanting for most of that game.
Yeah, I didn't get to see a lot of it, so I don't have a ton of analysis for it, but if you look at how the scoring played out, South Dakota State scored on one 75-yard play to open the game. Now, I'm not sure. I didn't even see if that was like a kickoff return or an actual play from scrimmage. And then basically Missouri scores 3 straight touchdowns, and at the end of the first quarter it's 21-7. So you probably think, okay, we're going to – but then watching the other games with relevant teams, you know, you see it coming across the bottom line, or you see a highlight of a South Dakota State interception or whatever it is, and you're like, whoa, what is going on here? So I don't know what to say except that, yeah, I agree with you. We still don't really know what we have in Missouri. I don't think that's exactly what you had in mind for a team like South Dakota State, even though it wound up being a 20-point win. Yeah, we'll see. I, like you said, we don't know what we have in Missouri right now.
Yeah. Did you get to watch any of the Kentucky game?
I did, since it was the early game. Those early games were kind of brutal, so that was one of the only ones. That UCLA-Virginia game was kind of the good game, and then I was watching that in the Kentucky game back and forth.
I mean, I know it was UT Martin, but, you know, to me it was kind of like that Tennessee-Utah State. There, with Dylan Favre and what UT Martin had to bring, you know, you could see Kentucky losing that game. And they came out. I mean, listen to this. 80 yards, 36 seconds. Four plays, 80 yards, a minute, 39. 90 yards, 2 minutes, 26 seconds, 8 plays. 9 plays, 3 minutes, 6 seconds, 91 yards. 3 plays, 39 seconds. 5 plays, 2 minutes, 27 seconds. 4 plays, a minute, 27. They scored fast. And they scored a lot. It was great.
Yeah, that's the exact comparison I would make. You said the Tennessee-Utah State comparison. You know, we're not calling Utah State or UT Martin world beaters, although I really thought Utah State had a chance to, if not upset Tennessee, keep it close. So I don't think you can get too high as either a Tennessee or a Kentucky fan on how much you dominated that game. But especially in the case of Tennessee and also for Kentucky, just not quite to the same level. You know, in the last 5 years, those games have been games that turned out to be either nail biters or losses, or you won fairly comfortably, but there was always a big but. Like, yeah, we won comfortably, but we returned 8 kickoffs for touchdowns and our offense had 100 yards total offense. You know, things like that. And all you can do is look at the positive of coming out and dominating a team like this, whether they're an inferior opponent or not. Because, you know, last year that was a game that, you know, maybe it was a 1 or 2 score game and there was some touch and go. So you have to be excited as both Tennessee and Kentucky fans about the dominance that was shown.
Yeah, no, I was extremely happy with the performance up until midway through the third quarter. And, you know, I mean, they were posting a shutout. And all of a sudden you saw UT Martin being able to put some drives together and starting to put a couple first downs together. Then you started to see them, you know, get close to scoring. Then they score. Then they turn around and they scored again. To me, that's where it was starting to get a little scary, because as Kentucky starts to see more improved teams and better programs, better defenses, what's that going to mean is for Kentucky? It definitely showed how young they still are, that they couldn't hold them to that shutout. Or at least late into the fourth quarter, I was wanting to see that. I really did, but that defense still's going to scare me all year long right now.
Yeah.
But I mean, Tolles looked good, 377 yards. Heard, I haven't gotten an update yet. I need to check on him. But, you know, he only had those 2 carries at the beginning of the game for 116 yards and 2 touchdowns. But, you know, got his ankle pretty good. So, you know, I've got a feeling they'll try to rest him this week, because with what they put on the field against UT Martin, they shouldn't have any problem this week either. So, I look for her to get some rest on that ankle, so he's ready for week 3 action. Because Kentucky has Ohio, but then week 3 they travel to the Swamp. So, I don't know.
I have to feel better about that Ohio game now. Not that you necessarily felt bad about it, but Ohio is another team that, you know, could sneak up and beat a Kentucky. Ohio is sort of a perennial bowl team, at least, but you have to have a little more confidence now, feeling like that's maybe a safer bet for a win.
Yeah, no, I'm giving them the win, and I'm giving them at least 2 touchdowns now. You know, as before, I'd say, yeah, they're going to win by, you know, I'll take a field goal.
Right.
You know, but they should be able to, and week 2, you want to see even more improvement. So, you know, you should definitely see that. Well, talk to us about the next game on my list, and that's the Alabama Crimson Tide playing West Virginia.
Okay. Yeah, so obviously there were some concerns that came out of that game defensively. I never thought before the game, I never thought that I would be talking about after the game that I'm not really concerned about the offense or even the quarterback situation all that much or the kicking game.
Are you concerned about how much airtime Lane Kiffin gets?
Yeah, that was he got a lot of FaceTime, didn't he? And anytime Saban and Kiffin were anywhere near each other, the cameras were like, oh, let's focus on them. I don't even care if a play is going on right now.
Boy, that was ridiculous. Even my wife said, why are they showing Lane Kiffin or that guy so much? Why are they showing that guy so much? It's like, who, Lane Kiffin? Yeah, why are they showing him so much? I don't know. I mean, there's reasons why he's a story, but he's not the story. It's the game going on right now, guys.
Yeah. Yeah, that was definitely interesting. But I think any reasonable Alabama fan has to be really happy with how Blake Sims played. I know that he didn't stretch the field a ton, and he missed some fairly easy throws. He had that one bad interception. But, you know, what quarterback doesn't have a couple of bad throws here and there? And really, other than that one interception, he didn't make any mental mistakes that were noticeable. Now, after the game, Saban said that he called a couple of plays wrong and called a couple of formations wrong. They had to burn some timeouts early in the game, and he actually told Coker to start warming up because he was going to go in if Sims didn't get under control. And then that's when Kiffin and Saban decided to go with more of the hurry up and simplify things, and Sims settled back down. So I think you have to be pleased with how Sims played. That was better than I could have expected, that I was expecting, to be honest. The quarterback competition isn't over. I think they were just, with the defense playing as poorly as they did and it being a one possession game for much of the game, they probably just were nervous to put Coker in and to break the rhythm and to, you know, do anything that could take away from the possibility of winning. So I think over the next 2 weeks with these easier opponents, you'll see Coker get a lot more time. The main concern, area of concern, was the defense. I believe and I hope that a lot of that will be alleviated by Trey DePriest coming back. They had two middle linebackers who basically hadn't played any meaningful snaps so far at the college level, and they're calling the signals and checking and all that stuff. And when you're playing against a hurry-up spread team like West Virginia, that's even more challenging than a typical, you know, regular pace offense. And there was a lot of pre-snap confusion. There were a lot of big holes in zones where it looked like guys were miscommunicating in terms of what the coverage was. So I'm hoping that will be rectified. And then the other big problem was Bradley Silva just got beat like a drum. And he was in position a lot of times, but he just never turned around, never seemed to make a play on a ball. A bigger receiver just abused him until they finally switched Cyrus Jones over to number 11 for West Virginia in the second half. And it's sounding like Eddie Jackson, who was supposed to be the number one cornerback anyway, but went down with a knee injury in the spring, sounded like he's taking first team reps, and he's going to play at least some in the next game. And hopefully again, that will sort of alleviate some of that. So I don't know, as an Alabama fan, you had that same sick feeling like this is Oklahoma and Auburn all over again. Why can we not defend these spread offenses? But I think there were reasons for it. There was a little bit more pass rush for this game than there had been at any point last year. So you're just hoping for improvement. There were a lot of young guys playing, and I think that they'll improve. I'm not hitting the panic button yet. It just wasn't quite the dominating performance maybe that a lot of people come to expect from an Alabama team.
Yeah, what was it? Was it 17-10? Is that when you went and scored? It looked like momentum was going your way, and then all of a sudden the kickoff happens and West Virginia returns it for a touchdown to tie it right back up at 17. Is that the score?
Yeah, it was about 2.5 minutes left. Alabama scored that touchdown, and you think, okay, so if we can come out and put a defensive stop up here, we get the ball back, maybe it's like 20-10, or maybe even they score a touchdown, it's 24-10 going into halftime. And then we didn't even get a chance to see what the defense could do in hurry-up mode because they ran the kickoff back. And it seemed like West Virginia made some kind of play like that every time you felt like Alabama was about to pull away, and they kept it close. And I also think West Virginia might be better than maybe we thought coming in. I didn't know until the broadcast, I think Brian Griese said that they had 9 defensive players have season-ending injuries last year, and they had 19 of 22 starters returning this year. So I didn't know those things about West Virginia until this game. So maybe they were being a little undersold. I mean, we talked about how 24 or 26, whatever that spread was way too big. I said I would be maybe comfortable taking it if it was at 14, but anything over 14 I would not take, and I think that played out in the Georgia Dome, and I think they may be not a contender in the Big 12, but they're not going to be 4-8 again this year.
Yeah, and, you know, they're kind of like Georgia and Florida where, you know, we know they were – much better than their schedule just because they had so many injuries. And you didn't realize that with West Virginia. So it was interesting to see that. It was a good game. It was nice to see Alabama finally start to put it away at the end, but it did. Every time it looked like Alabama was able to you know, put their foot down on the throat, somehow West Virginia wiggled out and made a game of it. So we'll stay with Alabama, the state, and talk about the Auburn Arkansas game for a few minutes as well. I didn't get to watch all of that game. You know, Marshall set out the whole first half, but even though the score didn't reflect it, you know, the quarterback was very effective, very efficient. He ran a really good offense. I don't think he's as big a run threat as Marshall. And that's where when you saw Marshall come in the second half, break that big run off for a touchdown and kind of changed the momentum a little bit. I think the rain also had something to do with it, because what was there, an hour and a half rain delay?
And yeah, Arkansas, it was pretty long.
And Arkansas was never the same team after that. But I was surprised at how well and how close that game was and the opportunities Arkansas had. I know we have them at the bottom of the West, and, you know, looking at the way things still go, I still have them at the bottom of the West. But, you know, if they play like they played against Auburn in the first half, they're going to beat a team that they're not supposed to.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that the game was on one side, Auburn was pretty much exactly what I think we expected. Really dynamic offensively, maybe still some question marks defensively. But on the Arkansas side, I was surprised. I mean, that first half, they looked like a real football team, which they never really looked like last year.
Yeah.
And they looked like a Brett Bielema football team, you know. A lot of tight ends, a lot of power run game, and then kind of opening up the pass and play action off of that run game.
And it was effective. They were having success with it.
Yeah, they were. And defensively, I'm not going to say they played great or even good, but they hung in at least. It was really interesting to watch the contrasts and styles. I actually had a stepbrother who was in the stadium, and as good as – oh, shoot, I'm drawing a blank. Johnson, the first quarterback, mm-hmm. As good as he was throwing the ball, he said there is no quarterback controversy because you can just tell how much better the offense is when Nick Marshall is in there. I was talking about how Artis Payne on those halfback dive plays, when Johnson isn't really a threat to pull it and to run, you know, Arkansas was able to kind of bottle him up. But then as soon as Nick Marshall gets in, he's so fast, you have to contain that outside. You're not able to just crash in on the dive play, and Artis Payne just starts going wild.
No, you could really see that in that game.
Yeah.
When Jeremy Johnson was in that first half, they didn't have that fear of the run from the quarterback, and they had that fear, and they looked a little bit like a deer in the headlight kind of look when Marshall got in there, because it wasn't. I mean, it was just a couple plays into the second half. The second half in the third quarter, when Marshall had that big run for a touchdown.
Yeah, and it was also amazing to see. I mean, just it's a credit to Malzahn and how good of an offensive coach he is. How their offense is completely different because Johnson is a far superior passer to Marshall, but he's not really the run threat. And yeah, so it's sort of a different kind of fear. But Johnson was throwing dimes, and those receivers, you know, Melvin Ray, Sammy Coates, who we all already knew about, and then the new guy, Dakeel. I still don't know how to say his name. I think they call him Duke, because it's easier to pronounce. I mean, those guys were running open, making plays, and then you come in with Marshall in the second half, and you get back to that offense we saw last year, where the pass is only there to kind of catch you when you're leaning in against the run too much, but mostly it's just about optioning you to death with all that speed at quarterback and the tailback tandem they have. And they have to have the best quarterback situation in the conference.
Yeah, I know. For a 1-2 combination right now, I think you're right. And, you know, they get lots of time to hone their skills because they get – San Jose next week, they're open, then at K-State, which should be a pretty good matchup.
Yeah.
Then La Tech and then LSU. So they, for the most part, should have an easy go the next 3 or 4 weeks. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens down there on the Plains.
Well, and their defense, so in the first half you thought, okay, same old Auburn defense from last year. But, man, they adjusted, and they were shutting down that run game in the second half. If that's the Auburn defense that's going to show up every Saturday, watch out. They're going to be the best team in the country. I don't know that that's the Auburn defense that's going to show up. Arkansas doesn't have the playmakers that a lot of these other SEC teams have, so they don't stress you nearly as much as a team like basically any other team in the West will. But it was impressive to see the adjustment that they made. And now some of that could have had to do with the fact that they stranded the Arkansas coaches in the elevator at halftime. I don't know how much that played into their defensive success in the second half, but it was very impressive by Auburn.
Well, Mississippi State's the next one on my list. They looked impressive. I don't think Southern Miss was much competition for them. They wanted to come in and own the state. That's their thing. And I think they did an excellent job doing that. Dak Prescott looked sharp. But indications out of Mississippi State, Blair was letting me know today that Dak might actually have hurt his foot. There's not a lot being said from the
– Really?
From the team, from the reporters, but it was all over Twitter today that Dak might be hurt.
I didn't see that.
So I don't know what that's going to entail for Mississippi State going forward. They've got UAB this week and South Alabama next week. If there's any soreness and any question at all, these are the 2 weeks you set him.
Yep.
You know, you make sure he's good because week five is at LSU. And so for Mississippi State to be the program they need, they need Dak Prescott to be healthy. And so, you know, if there is concern that his foot's in hurting at all, you want him healthy for that game. You set him. You just do. So I don't know what's going to happen there. We'll probably get some more information probably tomorrow on this. But, you know, that's something to keep an eye out on Mississippi State moving forward is how's that foot? How injured is he? Because that can really change the outlook for Mississippi State going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I hadn't heard that. I hope that he's healthy because I've been tooting his horn all preseason, so I want him to play a lot. But their defense looks, again, Southern Miss is not a very good team, but that defense looked every bit as good as advertised. And I think that obviously they've got some cupcakes the next 2 weeks. So you just try to get press it right and then keep that defense rolling coming in to face an LSU team that looks like they could be wandering in the desert a little bit offensively.
Yeah, no, we can talk about that. That's a good segue to talk about Les Miles in that program. Defensively, they still have some things to figure out. Wisconsin was able to pound the rock. I don't know what they did. They changed the fourth quarter. I mean, they went away from the run.
Yeah, that was so weird, wasn't it?
It was. And you know, what would that game have looked like if they would have kept the same game plan for all four quarters, Wisconsin. The outcome might have been completely different because
Wisconsin's going to be asking themselves that all season because that was their chance to get in the playoff. Their schedule was so weak.
Because, I mean, you look at the points they scored in the fourth quarter and the opportunities they had, it came off of turnovers off a throw. And was it McElvey? Is that the quarterback's name
for Wisconsin? Something like that.
You know, I mean,
something like that.
You know, LSU had made the plays when they had to. But Wisconsin put themselves in a position where they shouldn't have been making those plays. But it was a really good, entertaining game to watch.
Yeah, it was another kind of weird game. First of all, off defensively for LSU, we talked a little bit in the season previews how they've been one of the first teams from sort of the traditional power regular old offensive teams like Georgia, Alabama, LSU, and so on to go a little lighter and quicker on defense to combat some of these spread teams. And we talked about how that could be a little bit of a problem against a team like Wisconsin. And I think you saw that. I think that Wisconsin was basically able to impose their will and run the ball on them. And then, like we just talked about, for some reason, Wisconsin quit doing that late in the second half. I think that change will serve LSU well in the games against the A&Ms and the Ole Misses of the world. But it was just interesting to see them. You don't see an LSU team get run on like that. But they've gone a little bit more to the athletic linebackers in line, and I think you saw that. But the big thing I came away with was, man, offensively they've got some problems, and I don't know if it's all the quarterback. The running game looked good at times, looked great at times. And even the passing game looks good at times, but it was all based on the big play. I think the final stats were that he had like 9 completions, but for over 200 yards. I mean, they were never on schedule as an offense. You know, it seemed like they were never in like 2nd and 4 and 3rd and 1. It was a lot of weird long distance plays, and they hit long passes or they hit short passes where guys broke a bunch of tackles and made plays. And they do have really good athletes out there making plays for them, but you know, that kind of formula is not going to lead to wins every single weekend because there were just so many low percentage plays. And from what I saw in the quarterback, either one was overly impressive. So I think they're going to be much like Alabama and a few other teams. There's going to be a few more where they're still trying to figure out who their guy is for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I mean, in the running back situation, you know, they went with Hilliard late, LSU did. You know, Fournette did. He had streaks of being a freshman. You know, so
yeah.
But
he didn't look like Bo Jackson just yet.
No. But you know, when they handed the ball over to Hilliard, it was impressive. What he was able to do with the ball and how to carry it and what strength he was able to put with the line. He wasn't the best performance from a running back. You know, that's definitely got to go to Georgia this week and the performance they put up against Clemson because, you know, that first half, basically, that was a battle for Georgia. It was back and forth. But you really saw Georgia's defense really step up and just shut them down in the second half completely. And then just, you know, pound the rock and just control the line of scrimmage and control the clock from that point on from Georgia's standpoint. And that, you know, of all the games, that was the most impressive. And I think everybody agrees with that statement. That was the most impressive play of any team in week one. Except, well, A&M could be, you know.
Yeah, it's either A&M or Georgia. I would lean a little bit towards A&M only because I thought South Carolina was going to be better than they appeared to be. I wasn't sure that I thought Clemson might take a step back. But the running backs for Georgia, and we hardly even saw Keith Marshall. I mean, obviously Gurley was incredible. The true freshman Nick Chubb, who we had heard about in camp and was a highly touted recruit, man, he looked good. He looked like a ball player. He just came out in the second half and just kind of steamrolled Clemson, who looked like they didn't want anything to do with the power run game. But you touched on it. I think the way that their defense played has to be the most pleasant. I guess I shouldn't say pleasant surprise, but the best thing if you're a Georgia fan, because you saw for 3 years that defense underachieve, massively underachieve under Todd Grantham. Even though they had all the talent in the world, sending guys to the NFL, they just never could put it together. And man, Jeremy Pruitt, he's got the magic stick, I guess, because they look really good defensively. Now it's sort of like the South Carolina A&M game. With it being the first game of the year, I don't know how much of that is that Clemson lost two of the best players in the history of their football team on the offensive side of the ball from last year, and that maybe Clemson is not good offensively as we think they might be, or is Georgia's defense legit. But either way, I think if Grantham's coaching that defense, they give up way more yards and way more points
they're not posting a shutout in the second half.
Yeah, exactly. So if you're a Georgia fan, you've got to be excited now.
What's most impressive to me about that is what did Gurley have in the first half? Three touches? I think that's all he
– Yeah,
that's all he touched the ball in the first half. Yeah. So, you know, that was my pick in the East, and so far – it's looking like a really, really good option.
It's looking like they might walk away with it. Now, we didn't get to see Florida, so we don't know what they look like. But South Carolina was kind of, we thought, the only real legitimate challenger, and they certainly don't look like that now. I mean, Georgia could be walking away with this unless somebody surprises us.
Yeah, no, and you talk about Florida. You know, did you hear about the comments from Muschamp being asked about the suspensions this week?
No, I didn't.
He had a number of players that were suspended for the first game against Idaho. And so now they're eligible to, you know, be back on the field and play, even though that game's not going to happen. So
it happened for 10 seconds, so I guess that counts.
Yeah. So a lot of weight behind that suspension that he laid down. And we don't know what to expect from Florida other than their fans are – We're hyped for that game, and they were excited to be on the field. But that's all you know. Idaho came away without a loss.
Yeah, so. It's so bizarre. I didn't even know you could just not play a game like this. It seems very strange. It's got to be such a bummer for Florida fans. You know, you wait for 7 months once the football season ends for that opening weekend, and to not get your game, that's got to be a major bummer.
So what is the final ruling on that? I haven't seen a final ruling. It's canceled. So is it just an 11-game season for both teams?
Yeah, so they'll both just play 11 games. They both had the same bye week. I don't remember the week, but later in the season, maybe like early November. And it's kind of being argued which side or both sides did not want to play in that bye week. But, yeah, they're both going to have an 11-game season. And what if, you know, nobody's really sold that Florida is going to be awesome. You know, what if they go 5-6 because they only play games this year and don't go to a bowl game? I mean, it's not good.
I think that would be awesome. That would be ideal. That would be ideal because you know who didn't want to come back and play. So, that would be an ideal scenario for me, is a 5-6 Florida team.
They may see if they can reschedule that game for later in the season if they're like, you know.
All right, we'll give you an extra quarter of $1 million. Let's play this now.
Yeah. I never said we weren't going to play, but we're 3-5 and we make a bowl. Really, we'll even come to Idaho. How about that?
We'll cover your expenses and give you an extra quarter. since you had to come out here once, let's just take care of that. So we don't know what we have there. And then Tennessee, Utah State. We touched on that. Tennessee overall, I thought, looked pretty good. I was disappointed in Utah State. I was expecting more from them as well. You know, that's another program. It's like, you know, by all indications, that should have been a matchup. And it wasn't close at all. It was never close. You know, Utah didn't score until well into the fourth quarter.
Right. It was the kind of game that, as a Tennessee fan, you have to be just ecstatic about. again, not like it's a quality opponent or a great team that you beat, but Tennessee hasn't dominated a team like that that they were supposed to dominate in years. And they looked athletic. They looked quick up front. Those receivers are legit SEC receivers. They still have quarterback problems. I mean, he's not an upper-tier SEC quarterback. The run game has to worry you. They couldn't run the ball on a team like Utah State. I think that I expected it to be more of a game, too, but I didn't realize until close to game time that Utah State was also breaking in some new offensive linemen. Four of their five were new starters, and we talked about how why we're so concerned about Tennessee is so many new starters, well, all new starters on the offensive and defensive line. So that may have kind of negated that disadvantage that Tennessee is going to have against some better teams, but you have to be thrilled with the way they showed up, because that's a game that they've either lost or won by the skin of their teeth in the past 3, 4, 5 years.
Yeah, no, as a Tennessee fan, you're excited that the defense showed up. They played impressively. You know, even though it was Utah State, they had some young folks on there. Overall, they were effective in their game plan. And so you've got to be encouraged that, you know, these guys are now no longer have never seen a start. You know, they've all seen a start, and they've all seen action.
Mm-hmm.
So that excuse doesn't fly anymore. So now they have the game experience. Now they need to build upon it. And they'll get their opportunity over here the next couple of weeks. You know, they get Arkansas State. And they're really going to have to understand what a run game is at that point when they see those guys. But it doesn't get any easier after that, because then they go to Oklahoma. So, you know, as good as that performance is this last week against Utah State, they still have another pretty tough matchup this week with Arkansas State, and then head to Oklahoma.
Yeah, and I think the other main takeaway is the recruiting that he's doing there is working. Because, yeah, these guys are young, but you saw talent out there on the field for Tennessee that you feel like kind of, at least from a mass collection of talent,
yeah,
that you haven't seen in the past several years. You know, they've had players here and there, but there were a lot of SEC caliber guys on the field, and you haven't been able to say that about Tennessee the last several years. So I still think they've got some lumps coming to them this season, but you have to be excited about how that game went down.
Yeah. So as we look to this week, you know, we'll just mention some of the games, and we're not going to talk about Florida gets to finally figure out and play the field. They get Eastern Michigan. We talked about Kentucky gets Ohio. Missouri goes to Toledo. That's such a weird one. We talked about that on the Missouri podcast.
Yeah, that's weird.
South Carolina's got East Carolina. That would worry me after their performance.
Yeah, after the way they looked, East Carolina is a team that has usually been able to put a scare into a big, you know, a Power 5 team. I don't know anything about them this year, but they're not a complete nobody, at least. So if South Carolina doesn't play better, especially defensively, who knows what could happen there.
Yeah, and then Tennessee has Vanderbilt has Ole Miss. Alabama, you've got Florida Atlantic. Arkansas's got Nicholls State. Auburn's got San Jose State. LSU has Sam Houston. Mississippi State has UAB. And A&M has Lamar. So it's a great weekend to do something with your wife. Say, I'll give up college football. I know it's only week two, but I'll give up college football today for you, honey.
I'll do that for you, honey, because I love you.
That's right. So it's a great week to do that. If you're listening, go on and make plans to be able to do that, and you won't miss anything. So that's the good thing about this week. I don't know what else.
Yeah, it's definitely a lackluster schedule. Even the one SEC game is not very sexy now that Vanderbilt looks like they're Vanderbilt again. I think Ohio State and Virginia Tech play, Oregon and Michigan State, and Michigan and Notre Dame. Those are kind of the three games that have some interest. Other than that, there's just not a lot going on this week.
Doesn't Stanford have somebody?
Actually, yeah, I think I think Stanford and USC might be this week, so that's another good one.
So there's a couple good games out there, but by and large, it's not a great week for college football. I liked watching Dan Patrick today. They did a poll. What would you rather watch, college football or the NFL? And college football eked out the NFL. I was a little surprised.
Really?
Yeah.
51-49. I'm very surprised at that.
It was the percentages on the air. So, you know, it's surprising, but, you know, you look at the sheer number of college football fans.
You know, yeah, there's more college teams than NFL teams, I guess.
So, who knows? But I thought that was interesting. Anything else before we close up shop tonight here, Britton?
No, I don't think so. Football's here. It was great. Week one was awesome. Week two leaves a little to be desired, but, hey, it's still better than no football at all.
Now, I'll get to give back because I took all last week. So I did. I think I didn't move all day Saturday. I watched, and it rained here in Nashville, or up in Nashville. I'm not there right now, but at home it rained all day, all evening Saturday, so – you know, I was going to give up a little bit there in the evening, and then it started raining. So I was like, yes! Wait, I'm so sorry it's raining, baby. We'll just do that another day.
Yeah, I'm taking my wife to the beach this weekend and into next week, and I specifically planned it for this weekend by looking at the schedule and seeing what I wouldn't be missing. So I'm looking forward to that and winning some brownie points.
It's a great week to do that, so... take those long deserved weekends. Get a jump on your yard work for the fall, because it's going to be hard to get that done in a couple weeks. So,
yeah.
So with that, we're going to call this podcast done.